Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, I've never been so glad to see your lovely face. How are you doing after a hell of a COVID-riddled week?
I have survived. Can't keep me down, baby. So I had the vid. It was horrible. I then passed it on to Kerry, so nice. She's very angry with me. And it's now left our house and our system, so I feel
good.
Very,
we had a lot
very
of people-
good.
A lot of people sending in questions saying that they're also going through COVID or have just managed to get on the other side of COVID. I had it last month. Mm-hmm. I feel like 2022, as much as it is the year that we should all be past this stuff, is when most of us are getting it anyway.
Didn't you hear, mate? The government said that COVID's over. So officially it's over. Therefore, no one can get COVID and complain about it.
Go have all your garden parties, squares of cheese, whatever you need. Now, if any part of this audio quality is a little bit ropey, me and Jules, especially me, had a hell of a time trying to sort up some sort of recording thing, because various licenses that we use to record stuff have expired. And it was a big old thing. So hopefully this is fine. I'll sync it up afterwards. If you're hearing us talking, then I've managed to figure it out.
But what are they hearing us do, Scott? What are we here to talk about?
Hearing us do is the Entitled Banter podcast, the UBP, the UBP,
UBP,
the UBP, where we ask people for their various questions, thoughts, whatever they would like us to talk about, sometimes in a gaming context, sometimes in a film context, sometimes in a food context, whatever the hell else is going on.
It's getting very minimal when it comes to the gaming context.
I know. Well, that's the thing. One of the questions that we've got is like, is there a drought on? Yes, there is a cheeky drought on. But we'll get through as many questions as we can. First one is just a statement from Josh Has No Game, who says, no question, just glad the good egg is doing well. Well, same. Aww,
thank you. So much for your kind words, my friend. And
praise
also, let's get this man a game. That's what I'm saying.
McAllister NYC says, hey there, fellas, at home with the Rona and realizing I have a lot of time to kill. Personally, using this time to finally dive into Xenoblade Chronicles on Switch. If you had to spend a week in quarantine, are there any giant games you'd love to get into? Now, did you find yourself doing this? Because I played a lot of Triangle Strategy when I was in COVID. That was my COVID game.
See, I needed a game much like Triangle Strategy that was basically like hands off, as it were, like deep in terms of like, oh, I could take my time thinking about my moves, but at the same time wasn't too like taxing in terms of like twitch reflexes and stuff like that. So shooters and stuff like that were out the window for me. But I made a considerable dent on the brand new Warhammer game, which is Warhammer 40k Chaos Gate Demon Hunters, because Scott, it is XCOM in Warhammer form.
Really?
It is my exact crossover.
I was just going to say that's the most you thing ever, but if then you said XCOM, I was like, no, I'm coming running, Jules.
The Venn diagrams overlapped, and I just made like various sex noises as they did. Oh. It was beautiful. So I'm just going to bang on about this game for like 2 seconds, okay, and then we'll move on. When I say that it's like XCOM meets 40k, I'm not even that's not hyperbole. That is true. You've got the same sort of grid-based thing, but the best part is that you don't have percent percentages when you come to your shooting. If you're in range, you do
you
damage, but depending on the range that you're at, that's how little or more damage you do. That is it. It's so it's good.
How long has XCOM been going? It's taken them, 30 years to get around the percentage-based thing?
Yes. And I will never, ever forgive missing a near 90% plus shot when they are 2 foot away from me and I've got a shotgun. It's like, how do you miss? That is
I started thinking, I know this isn't going to make a whole lot of logical sense, but I started thinking that every shot is a 50% shot. Like, it's either going to hit or it's not. So I was like,
that's the thing. You go
what
into
even
the
is
mindset.
The point of probability?
Like, there is no such thing as percentages in an XCOM game because it's like Schrodinger's shot. You're missing and hitting at the same time.
Everything is just a coin flip regardless of anything. But this year is the year of strategy because Triangle Strategy, the Warhammer game, there's Mario and Rabbids making a grand return. So it's, if you like your grid-based stuff.
You know what, mate? I'm actually going to get it. I'm going to get it because I picked up the original on the e-store sale that they had recently. Mm-hmm. And I hate to admit it, mate. I've had the time of my life with that game. I've really enjoyed it. I love that the bouncing mechanic and moving your people around. I was like, oh, okay, this game's really quite well
thought out. I thought the animation was lush. I thought the Snowdrop engine looked gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, the whole thing of chaining different moves together so that you can sort of bounce off a guy, hit someone else. Mario in the sequel has twin pistols, which
isn't it?
Hit two guys at once, which I like the idea of that, especially in a strategy context.
I'm still getting over the idea of Mario with guns. It's still a little bit odd, and the fact that at no point he doesn't shoot the rabbit in the face. Just go up to him, bam, 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 bam.
Just a targeted, holding down shot. For me, Rona stuff, when I was just laying in bed, it was just strategy things. So it kind of was like you. Just play Triangle Strategy, which I honestly think, I'd look up the developers of this, because it is a mix of Square Enix and a couple of other smaller studios. But I honestly think it's the best character writing that Square Enix have put their name to since Final Fantasy IX or something. It's a really, really pristine world and set of characters.
Isn't this from the studio that was developed by or created by Square Enix specifically to make RPGs?
Oh,
is this RPG Factory? Is that what it's called?
That's Tokyo RPG Factory. It's not them.
Okay, fair enough.
I forget the small... They've got one of those... Because Square Enix have loads of different divisions, so it's just sort of Square Enix Division 1 or whatever. But there are various sort of veteran staff that are classed as Square Enix developers helping out on the project. It's kind of like a cumulative thing, but you can tell that it has that old school, late 90s party-based feel where every character is memorable, all the decisions have a bit of weight. And it's just the design of the world. It's so Final Fantasy meets Game of Thrones. It's very Final Fantasy Tactics, but with a really, really good story.
What I love is that sometimes Square Enix just knocks it out of the park when it comes to character writing, because for every sort of really terrible, cliched and trope-heavy story they've got, they've got what was that newest Dragon's Quest game that came out? Was it 11 or 14?
Dragon's 11 was the last one, yeah.
That is a really well-written game. It takes a while to get going, but by the end of things, I was like, okay, even though they're telling the classic sort of, oh, there's kingdoms and magical elements and MacGuffins everywhere, I was like, I'm actually pretty hooked because the characters are silly and funny and I really
like this. There is also Stranger of Paradise where it's just...
That's meant to be so bad.
I know, and it's like every other word is just like, I'm here to kill chaos. And it's just like, I kind of want to know what that game is. Like, I played a lot of the demo, a lot of the trial stuff, but I haven't actually got around to it. That might be something to just sort of mop up for the rest of this year.
Yeah.
We spent a long time on the first question. Welcome to the UBP. That's kind of what we do. Next question from Kieran Power, who says, what do you think Kojima is up to right now? What do you think Kojima's doing?
I know what he's up to right now. He is sitting in a bar somewhere with Suda51. They're not exchanging any words at all, just knowing glances at each other. And the red wine served in a man's hat with a plum floating in the center has just been delivered at their table. That's what they're up to.
He's a living trilby, that man. I'm curious. I saw a rumor doing the rounds yesterday. There's a Twitter account called Oops Leaks that occasionally is spot on with stuff. And I was like, it's too on the nose to be this leaks channel. But sometimes they're right. They put a thing out, I think it was just last night, saying here's a roundup of leaks for the rest of the year. Call me in a year when all of these have come true. And one of the ones that was listed as highly likely, or I think it was greenlit, was Kojima's next project, whatever the hell that is, whether it's the rumored Xbox horror thing or whether it's next Death Stranding or whatever. So hopefully we're seeing something from Kojima very soon, because there's the Summer Games Fest stuff and Jeff Keighley always likes bringing him out. So yeah.
Do you ever sort of want Hideo to take his brand of auteur directors, his mark, as it were, and apply it to a genre that nobody ever saw coming? Because I know that he tried to make a genre with Death Stranding. Obviously, it's a Strand game, but I was starting to think, like, how easy would it be to start the conspiracy theory that Hideo Kojima is actually making a racing game, right? Because he obviously put
he
put it into that. So maybe this is like a teaser and he's going to do the next sort of like Need for Speed, but it's going to be like, instead of the classic sort of like, yo, bro, that's a nice scooter with a drop, what car terms, a nice spoiler.
Size. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, imagine that, but it's like told from his thing. So it's actually like people racing, but like their organs are the currency and their fuel is actually the lifeblood of the entire population of the city they're racing from. So if they die, if they lose, the whole town dies. Look at that. I've just made this. Whoa.
That would be like, honestly, like someone asked us what crossover game we should do. And I was like, well, we answer that quite frequently, so I'll not put it in this week's episode. But that's the perfect thing. Like the amount of directions that Need for Speed have tried and failed, the amount of times they keep trying to reboot themselves. Just Kojima madness. Just do weird characters with scars across their head. Yep. Sure.
Because like one of the funniest things is that sometimes racing games realize that you can't have like a super serious storyline. You have to embrace the silly. That's why one of the best racing game storylines is actually in Jack X, because halfway through the game, they just go like, you're all poisoned now and you have to race, otherwise you're going to die of poison. It's like
The Walking Dead was
this is a very convenient poison that lasts the entire like season, isn't it?
I saw Jack X is going to be on the PlayStation Plus premium stuff.
So. Yes, yes.
So you can finally get the final installment in the Jack story.
It's so bad, it's good. I love that game so much.
I don't love it. I went into it thinking, oh, this will be Crash Team Racing, because that was the second time Naughty Dog took a trilogy and then did a car thing. But it's nowhere near as good as Crash Team Racing. For me, anyway, I don't know.
It's like Burnout. Think of it like Burnout, but with like more rockets and.
Can you do
more
takedowns? I don't remember being able to.
Yeah, you can. There's an entire mode that's built around you destroying other cars.
I'm about to go back to
and
it.
I had Queens of the Stone Age doing the intro song. I was like, really? Yeah. It was, I can't remember if it was Go With the Flow or something like that. They put in there, and it was like, wait a minute, so you're insinuating that Queens of the Stone Age exist within the Jack X universe?
That's
because they turned the radio off, and it's like, wait, so that was diegetic, that means that actually existed.
Like, how do I not remember any of this?
Because you blocked it out.
I forcibly was like, there's no Wumper Fruit in this. I'm throwing it out the window. Next question from KTM421, who says, what's your opinion on the Last of Us remake for PS5, currently rumored to be coming out later this year? This is another rumor doing the rounds that might get confirmed across the summer, but yeah, what do you think of the idea of the Last of Us remake? Apparently the we're doing the rounds is you'll believe why it needs to exist when you see the new gameplay. So I'm guessing they've just taken a whole bunch of the animations from 2 and then I guess just kind of reapproached how you interact with the environments from 1, and maybe you can slink between bookcases and do all these other interactive things that we're into.
What I find really upsetting is the fact that it implies that the game needed to be remade in the first place by putting that title on it. Like there's very few games that I feel can make it through unscathed after like years of release and still be held aloft as like, this is a moment in gaming, because and Last of Us is definitely one of those for me. It came at a point in my time where I needed a game like that to exist, and I got a hell of an experience out of it. Same. So I'm very apprehensive about what they're going to do, because remaking implies that what they're doing is they're taking that story and applying a modern lens to it. So does that mean then
nothing from the ground up? It's like
they're still going to add some elements in. They have to add some new elements or some contextual stuff in. And as we all know with like, and I hate to use this as an example, but it's just the most obvious one, the Star Wars franchise, the more lore you add in, the more mistakes you potentially make by saying, wait a minute, does that add up? Does this character need to be related to this character? Like blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So if they start adding in new characters and elements into The Last of Us, like, oh, we're trying to further the relationship between Joel and Ellie, they may end up breaking that because they might be too on the nose with it. But like, people might know what to expect, and it's like, oh, look, they're having another heartwarming moment sort of thing.
I'm curious what they do in terms of sort of stitching together 1 and 2 a bit more tightly. Like, you can make sure the character model for Abby's father is consistent because he plays a massive role. And it's like, yeah, that's the thing though, because like, it was, this project apparently came from the fact that the main heads at Naughty Dog were still deciding what their next main game's going to be, the Neil Druckmanns, the Holly Grosses. So people who are just coders and art departments were just like, well, we don't know what we're going to do. So they were just thrown at The Last of Us remake to do something for like a year or two. And so that's what this is. So I wonder how much it's going to feel like Last Last of Us 2. And yeah, if they have gone back to certain scenes and stuff, and whether it is just a case of, not like a remaster, because it is being touted as a remake, but yeah, whether you've added different character models and animations, I don't know how it feels. Like maybe, I mean, we're coming up on almost a decade since The Last of Us. It's going to be the HBO show. Like maybe they do need like a big Last of Us premiere product or whatever to remind people how good The Last of Us is. But yeah, that's apparently coming later this year. So I guess we'll see if we get any footage for it across the summer. Yeah. Elfar Oliver says, last Monday, me and Josh Brown, who I had to grab on, I dragged him in. I said, do the UBP. He says that we really wound ourselves up wanting aliens in medieval times. Now, this came from the fact that Bloober team, apparently they were working on a game where it was an aliens game, like alien tied in game, but it was set in medieval times. So all that back then they were worshipping the xenomorph, and it was just this idea of like aliens and xenomorphs tearing through medieval times. And I was like, that would be
brilliant.
That
sounds so good.
That would be brilliant. Apparently it was cancelled. And I was like, no, that would be great. So Elfar says, we got all wound up in the same way that me and you just did, going like, that's a great idea. But now we've got a trailer for the new Predator movie called Prey with Native Americans. What other settings / places / time should we get either an alien or a predator?
Right. Okay. So we have an example, and unfortunately it's a bad example of what I want to see, and that's Cowboys versus Aliens, the film. Like, it's not a good film, but there is so much potential for there to be an alien predator stalking through the Wild West, because think about how the towns were formed back then. Like, I mean, let's just use Red Dead Redemption as our example of what an atypical Wild West frontier town would be. Mm-hmm. You've got your soul like way in, you've got a few scant houses, you've got a few sort of locations that are maybe a mile or two away where the farmhands are, sort of thing. Mm. Imagine hearing rumors within the town of like, oh, there's this beast that's going around slaughtering all of the farmers and the livestock and stuff. And then as it makes its way into town, realizing that, oh, no help is going to come in the next sort of couple of weeks. So we've got to basically fend against this super technologically advanced predator with bad guns. Oh yeah, I could.
They're all jamming in the dust.
Yeah, it'd be brilliant. It'd be brilliant.
Stuff like that. Anything where you take like newfangled or new fast moving thing and put it in old context, I feel like that works in a quite more unique way. Like you said, Cowboys and Aliens is still memorable or talked about because of that. And I remember finding the vampire in Red Dead Redemption 2 and just being like, this feels so like kind of weirdly half out of place, and it comes at you so fast. So I do like the idea of that, especially the medieval thing. I just think that's so unique. Like, if you did that with enough budget, it would really stand out. Your idea is brilliant as well. I love the idea of that. Mine, I think, would just be future stuff, because I think I would do some sort of, it's kind of more expected, but I think you can do a lot more with the sort of the way that you can like blend like an alien's body with all the you know, cyber humanism stuff, and like, are we getting away from humanity and all that kind of stuff, and then getting like alien augments and stuff like that.
Also, another setting that could be very good, imagine if it was like feudal Japan. So it was like you had like katana sword battles, and then you had like ninja stealth shinobi stuff. That'd be amazing. That like being out stealthed by a shinobi would actually be quite a cool scene.
Yeah, there's that bit. I said, yes, there's that bit in Predator 1 where, I can't remember what you call the character, has that sort of almost samurai style showdown with the Predator, and then it cuts and you see the Predator just cut his head off.
Yeah, Billy. Billy gets ruined, man.
Billy gets ruined, and then hashtag Billy gets ruined. And then in Predators, they redo that scene, but they actually show you the fight and with like a different character and everything. And I was like, yeah, you could totally do, obviously Predator like borrows quite a lot from codes and samurai and honor and stuff like that. So like, feudal Japan, Jules, you're on fire. I think that'd be awesome. Feudal Japan, Predator would be great. Next question from Woofle House, who says, hello lads, big fan. What culture helped me get through COVID? So much love. Big love. And anyone who's suffering with COVID, like, massive thank you for checking in with us. We've both been through it. We know what it's like. So he says, which poorly executed or received game do you think deserves a remaster or a sequel? So many games are getting remasters, but what stinker would be well served with a second shot?
I know that this answer straight away in my heart of hearts. I've actually got two answers, if I'm honest. First one, for the PlayStation 1, Psychic Force needs a bit of love. If you've never played it, I can sum it up to you, the reason why you should play it. You fight inside a giant cube. It's a fighting game. Every person's got psychic powers. And the main enemy, the biggest bad guy of the entire game, is called Keith.
Oh God, I know the Keith game. Yeah. I know this is the Keith game.
Yeah, I know, because I've told you about it before.
My mind just goes to stuff that's outdated and or has dated horribly now. Things like Kung Fu Chaos on the original Xbox, which I loved back in the day, but it's horrific.
Oh, it's dicey. It's so dicey
now. It's
very
dicey.
The same with the Hogs of War accents. You cannot be doing that in 2022, mate. No.
Do that with, reapproach it somehow, make it funny again, don't make it horrible. Yeah. And because the game mechanics were cool, like 3D worms, like your Hogs of War was, Kung Kung Fu Chaos was like a top-down minigame collection that was really fun with friends.
Like Power Stone-style combat, wasn't it?
Yeah, anything that's more martial arts based is always cool. I always feel that martial arts are just so underserved in games. Like, why are there not more melee-focused video games with really cool roundhouses and stuff like that?
Well, I got a little thing for you, my friend, because my second choice to take for an obscure game that was an absolute stinker, because it was really bad. Why has nobody ever made a remake of the game Fighter Maker for the PlayStation 1? Now,
what the
this
hell
is the thing.
Is that?
Right, okay, so what would you expect from a game called Fighter Maker?
Well, see, that makes me think of that. Was it called Clay Fighter? Or something? Oh, N64?
No, I'm
guessing I'm making my own fighter is what I'm assuming.
You're damn right, my friend. And it had, like, at the time, I won't say groundbreaking graphics. I would say more 6 feet under graphics.
Okay.
Because they were terribly dated and dead. But you could make a character from scratch. Like, we're talking like arms, legs, proportions, everything. Give them a fighting style, customize their special moves, customize their taunts, customize their victory things. And it wasn't just a case of like picking one from a list. You'd be like, okay, so I want my character when he wins to throw his arms to the left. His leg's going to fly off to the right. He's going to hover around, float in the air, do 5 forward flips and then land and then say, hello, like that.
That would be great.
Like, you can do all that stuff. Imagine that, but with today's graphics, today's engine, and you just build a fighter from the ground up. But the thing is, you just make it so that it's so not balanced. The whole gimmick is it's just the silliest fighters created it for just absolute bounce.
Like a more one-on-one or like version of like Gang Beasts where it's just flaily and everyone's kind of just coming at each other.
Yeah.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Next question from James Winchester, who says, okay, chaps, honest opinion on Avatar 2. Also, very briefly, what are your top 3 most wanted games at the Xbox/Bethesda showcase or the rumored Sony Summer of Games conference stuff? Have you seen the Avatar 2 trailer, Mr. Chester?
I have indeed.
Where are you at on that franchise? Because I wasn't bothered at all. And then I saw Avatar 2 in front of Doctor Strange. I knew they were doing an Avatar 2, but I hadn't seen the trailer. And I kind of was like, in the current era that we're in, where every single old franchise is just being mined to death. Mm-hmm. I was quite glad like seeing like a new IP, a new franchise, a new world to get stuck into. I know that Avatar 1 was very by the numbers, but like at least it's a new thing. It's not just something from 30 years ago that we're going back to again.
I don't know why, but I've just got no interest in it. Like, right. I enjoyed watching Avatar in the cinemas the first time around, and then when I caught it again on like DVD, watching over at a mate's house, I was just there like, ah, yeah, this is actually pretty bad. There's a lot of really cringe moments in this.
That's kind of what makes me wonder what they do for the sequel, because the first one is so generic and so wrapped up that I'm like, where do you go from here? And weirdly, that makes me interested in it.
My worry is
there's like another 9 of them too.
My worry is that it's going to end up feeling a bit like, do you remember Valerian and the Thousand Worlds or whatever it was called?
Where
it
was just like tons of Mass Effect.
Yeah, like tons and tons of visually impressive things, but no substance whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to be left with another sort of film that was like kind of like how Ready Player One was. You're like, oh, that was a visual feast, but I walk away feeling so empty.
It's really weird as well, because Avatar was obviously sold with Sam Worthington. Like, he was he was Hollywood's next big action guy, and then none of his stuff works.
I really resent the fact that Sam Worthington got bumped up for that, because it was like, Sam Worthington's amazing, he's fantastic, look at how he acts in Avatar. It's like, mate, he's not even in half the film, and he's only providing his voiceover stuff.
Just his voice,
and literally they've got like CGI all over him to make him look like he's expressing more. So they're like, oh yeah, he's going to definitely be the other.
I remember it was like that, and Clash of the Titans, and then he was in Man on a Ledge.
Sucked, by the way. I hated that film.
None of them worked. And he just was just the most blandest guy. I'm sure he's a lovely man, but like all of his performances came across as very bland. So I don't even know if he's in Avatar 2. I'm not sure if the protagonist is someone else.
He is the 2013 to 2018 white male protagonist you'd see on every box cover for any video game that
just
had a gun.
Yeah,
whoa, let's not bring the Space Marines into this, mate.
Not the Warhammer Space Marines, they're cool Space Marines. But what was that game where you would like raise and lower ground, you know, when the cover shooter boom was in? And it was like you could point at stuff and just raise the ground.
What was that called?
Whatever that thing was called, that
not
like
time
the guy
shift,
that was on.
That?
It's called something like Landfall, but it's not that.
Okay.
But either way, that game, the guy that was on the box art for that, I remember people being like, "Okay, this is it. We've hit the apex. Yeah, this is too much. There's a Space Marine guy in every one of these things." In terms of stuff that I want to see at the Xbox and the Sony shows, literally anything, because we're so flat right now, especially on the Xbox side. I genuinely feel sorry for people who are completely invested in Xbox, because their future just looks so scattered. I know things are announced. There's
Please,
Fable.
Sir,
there's
may
Paper
I have
Talk.
A game?
Yeah, can I get anything to play that isn't just Game Pass? Like,
so
for the love of God. I just want them to sort of surprise people. The Perfect Dark stuff, if you look into the way that game is coming together, apparently development is an absolute mess. It doesn't seem like... I would be amazed if that Perfect Dark thing even actually comes together anymore, because it seems like the various leads and the heads of the project aren't really getting on with each other. So we'll see what that thing is. But yeah, I just want to see new, cool ideas. They have so many different things under their wing and so many different IPs that they've bought, and they've kind of bought their way to the top, but show those things off. Like, Obsidian's Avowed we need to see more of, but I just want new IP. Like, I'm someone who gets really bored with how much we're mining old stuff, and I always kind of just go like, okay, but what are the new worlds we've got? And so I kind of just want to see new ideas. And as much as Sony have things to show off, like God of War or whatever, they might do a Bloodborne patch or something to sort of get in with the fans, I want new stuff. Like, I think that it's about time. We're like 2 years into the generation. It's time that we had some new worlds, new games,
100%
new IP,
agree.
Not just old stuff.
We've got I think it's Forspoken? That's coming out. That's the one thing that I'm actually quite interested in seeing, because even though that a lot of people are saying that there might be a lot of generic open world vibes about it,
it just looks very corporate.
But I want to see what they can do with
That thing's insane, because it looks really promising gameplay-wise. I think it looks like it plays really, really well. Mm-hmm. And it's written by Gary Whitta, and I'm pretty sure... the woman who wrote Uncharted, Amy Hennig.
Yeah.
Like, that's an insane power duo on the writing side.
It is indeed.
It's also Square Enix on the publishing side, and they get so involved with creative that they make everything so smoothed over and awful. And Square Enix are in a horrible position right now, so I think they'll make it as safe and bankable as possible and probably kill it.
You say that, but then again, remember, they're doing this whole thing with, it's Yuji Naka, isn't it, who's the guy who made Balan Wonderworld.
Yes, who originally made Sonic, and then he's just...
And now he's saying that he's like, is he suing Square Enix because of the fact that they meddled with his project so much?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on there. So hopefully Square Enix has kind of learned from this PR backlash. Although I'm not seeing it being covered that much. It feels like that story was like, it came out and it's like, no, that's really not okay to mess with somebody's game and then have their name plastered all over it. Like,
yeah, he'd left the project over a year, like before it was made public. So he was like, well, he's already left and they got the project over the finish line. Obviously, it was absolutely abysmal, but his name was used to sell it, like, you know, the Sonic Creator's new game or Billy Hatcher's new game. And then it was like, here's this game. But yeah, he'd left many months or like a year or so beforehand. So he's suing Square Enix for the way that thing rolled out. But Square Enix themselves, like, they've sold off Tomb Raider, Deus Ex, like all their big IPs that they could do something with. And they've kind of just held on to Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest. So they're in a really weird place. I don't know. Like, there's all the rumors that they might get bought by Sony. So I guess that might help in regards to Sony going, okay, focus on this. But Square Enix are in a hell of a place after wasting so much money on the Avengers as well. But yeah, hopefully the summer brings with it some games. I know that obviously it's a hard time. The amount of projects that got started during COVID, it's just going to be even harder for them to come together. But hopefully there's something to show off.
Yep.
Willie Arreaz says, no question, just some good vibes for both of you, especially for Jules, and cheers to his recovery.
Oh,
and
thanks, mate.
Next question from AJ, who says, UBP, hope you're both doing well. Jules, I'm glad you're better. Do you guys feel that we're in another game drought? Another major title just does not release until August. I will shout out Sniper Elite 5, and that's out in a week. I love the Sniper Elite series, and I thought 4 was the best one so far.
I'm not going to lie, I'm actually quite excited about that game as well. And there may or may not be some emails going back and forth between me and the publisher to arrange some, so that'd be quite fun. If we
well,
can get
there you
a copy
go. See, it's on Game Pass, thankfully, too. So if you're on the Xbox side, you can pick that up. But yeah, there's not that many big head-turning releases. But I feel like Sniper Elite is a give-it-a-shot-if-you-can kind of game.
But I would say Mario Strikers. Football's
Mario
coming home this summer.
Mario Strikers. Give me that. Give me Rocket League crossed with Mario. Give me all the Mario sports games. I played a stupid amount of Mario Golf, even though the Switch one was like the worst one but of the Mario Golf series.
Yeah.
But yes, next question from Jack Asbury, who says, I'm just wondering what you guys think about superhero fatigue. It feels like for a lot of people, it's definitely starting to settle in. Not for me personally, but that's the general vibe I get from the internet. Yes, pretty much. Although, to be honest, I'm in a bit of a Batman bubble at the minute because I've just listened to Batman Unburied, which is a phenomenal audio drama thing that Spotify are doing that I'm not seeing anyone talk about. I tweeted being like, is anyone listening to this? Because it beat Joe Rogan in the podcast charts. And I was like, well, surely there's millions of us then.
Yeah, that's the
but
thing.
But it's not anyone anywhere.
Because I was watching, I think it was a H3H3 podcast, and they were talking about, like, oh, we're a Batman channel now because they've just completely been, it's blown apart Joe Rogan's top spot position.
Yeah,
so
knocked
like,
off
right,
the top spot
enough.
Or something. Yeah, Unburied, complete side note, but Batman Unburied on Spotify, genuinely brilliant, really cool alternate reality take on the Batman mythos with some great twists and turns. And episode 5, you know when people go, you need to watch this show because of this episode?
Yeah.
Episode 5
is the one,
Batman
is
Unburied is the one. It's great. So yeah, I'm in a big old Batman bubble. I'm replaying the Arkham games, but I do know what Jack means. Overall, MCU like, stuff, I'm checked out.
Like Gotham Knights, for example, you and I are both smelling the stink rising up through the floorboards at the moment. There is a dead game underneath that polished veneer because
the
thing is just that I want that game to be brilliant. I really do. But after watching that gameplay demo of it and seeing all of the sort of like, you can use in-game currency to buy all of these new abilities and skills, I'm like, we've seen it all. We've done it all. Why are you trying to force this padding out that is so egregious that you know that your player base is going to be absolutely killed off in after a month of just being like, oh, great. I'm going to grind the same 5 missions over and over again.
Well, it
just so I can
like
afford one piece of Batman Beyond's costume that doesn't even look like Batman Beyond.
It's like, I feel like that game, I said this on some other thing that we recorded, where I was like, that game was made for a world where the Avengers was a success.
Yes.
Like, everyone rebelled against the way that game was structured. Same with Anthem and parts of Mass Effect Andromeda, but that style, quote unquote, of game where it's just go to a point in the map and defend it against waves of enemies or go fight six collectibles.
How bullet spongy as well did the enemies look as well?
Yeah.
When you're fighting there, it's like none of the goons in when you're playing the Batman games feel even remotely as spongy. Yes, they can take a few hits and Batman is a heavy-fisted bloke, but at the same time, like it was 3 or 4 hits and they were each down. Whereas this one was like bang, 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 flip, flip, bang, 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 bang. Oh, come on.
It's so messy because it's not an Arkham game. It's not in the Arkham timeline because Suicide Squad is the actual Rocksteady game is. But Gotham Knights is taking the final plot point from Arkham
Knight.
That he's
gone.
That he's dead or gone. And then we're running with that. So it's like this weird spin-off. And then the combat both is and isn't Arkham style because it's kind of more like Avengers. It's more just hit everyone all at once kind of thing. It just feels really, really messy and it feels very corporate. It feels very, this is what the kids want kind of thing. And like you said perfectly, there's a dead game under there and we'll see how it comes together. But yeah, superhero fatigue overall. I feel like the MCU has got a hell of a lot more messy with the TV shows. I don't feel like anyone's really keeping up with them. And for me, I hated Doctor Strange. I thought it was an absolute mess. So there is
I've
that
heard
side of it
very polarizing things about this film that it's it looks good but is absolute tosh.
I wasn't a fan. People really like the Sam Raimi stuff, and I do like pockets of the Raimi stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just thought it was just so messy. No real good character writing, whatever. I'm not going to make it a film podcast, but I wasn't a fan of that thing. Darren Barkley says, welcome back, Jules. On the last episode with me and Josh, we mentioned that no gaming is done during office hours. Darren says he always figured that gaming for review wouldn't be on our own time. So what is a typical day in the office for us? It certainly isn't playing games.
Well, this is the thing. I think that we can tell people now because Adam Cleary put a post of it the other day. We actually have new employers at the moment now. What Culture has been, I'll use the word absorbed by...
Acquired
by Future Publishing. And so now things may change. We may indeed be allowed to play and do review games, do more streaming, do stuff like that in our own time while we're at work. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, a day in the life of Jules Gill, Egg Daddy, is that I wake up, I get to work at 7:30, I write a script, I record the script, I then message my boss and say, have they got any VOs to do? He gives me some VOs, I make sure that they're done, I send ideas out to other people to make sure that they're done. The content creaming cow does not ever stop getting
milked.
The
content pastures, need to be farmed. It's nonstop. Like Jules said, we got acquired by Future, who was a really cool thing because it's not going to change anything if anyone's thinking that. Like, if anything, things will get better. We've just acquired different ways to do more stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Future Publishing and Future Studios, they're responsible for like the official PlayStation magazine and stuff like that that I grew up reading. So I was like, oh my God, these guys. So that was insane. But yeah, for me, it's every single thing that comes my way, whether it's making artwork for the thumbnails or writing stuff or editing stuff or emailing someone or giving out ideas. What the hell ever, I don't stop. And I'm the crunch man. That's me. I'm Crunchford.
You are living in crunch land. You are Captain Crunch over there. And it's not good. We keep telling him to take a break, but then Scott replies with a shrug that says, but who else is going to do it, Jules?
I can't. I know. It's like, oh, you can take time off now. How can I do that?
Time off, that's literally not like just taking away a wheel of a car. It's taking away the goddamn engine.
Well, that's the thing. So yeah, those are like conversations that need to be had going forward in regards to just sort of sorting an ability for me to take more time off. I try and do a bit of everything. Obviously I'm the gaming editor or whatever, but we work really closely. Me and Jules work together all the time, same with me and Josh and the rest of the team. But yeah, it's writing, it's presenting, it's doing adverts, it's doing podcasts, mm-hmm. it's doing everything other than just playing games. The actual playing game stuff is in our own time, but like Jules said, we might be reapproaching streaming stuff or whatever we can get off the ground again.
More reviews
review discussions stuff, more on camera, multiple people discussion stuff, all fancy, all fun things for the rest of this year. But those cogs turn slow, so we'll see what happens across the rest of 2022. A question from Jacob Sawyer: which villain do you want to cast for the Batman sequel? Who do you want for the Batman sequel, and who would you cast? Personally, I would want Mads Mikkelsen to be Mr. Freeze. They think that Gotham Knights will be a surprise hit like Guardians was, rather than the Avengers. Well, I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so, for your sake.
I don't get Guardians vibes from that game, but you never know. Who do you want for the next Batman movie? Like, let's say Robert Pattinson comes back for more Batman. Who's he going to go up against?
Well, the thing is, I've been calling for the Riddler for absolutely ages. Mm. So for having him in the latest one was a huge boon for me. I think that there's more to be done with maybe a B-list Batman hero. Start moving into the sort of deeper rogues gallery and maybe start getting a bit weird.
Condiment Man?
Oh yeah, Calendar Man. If they did Calendar Man and did it like, because obviously
Calendar Man too. Yeah,
because Calendar Man, Julian Day is his name. He obviously commits crimes on specific national holidays and this stuff like that. Now, it sounds silly, but in the Arkham City games and also in some of the recent comics, they've turned that into a really dark thing because it's like how somebody whose gimmick should be so easy to stop can't be stopped. And he's like a serial killer with some really horrible stuff. So mix that with maybe Victor Zsasz, a bit more sort of like,
oh my God,
get really violent, get really dark, get Professor Pig in there as well, you know, where he murders people in the pig mask and he's a surgeon. Like if they start going really sort of like dark and disturbing with it, and trade off of like, if that Batman film was a thriller, this is an out-and-out horror film, then that could be a way to move things forward.
See, that's a massive shout. Batman Unburied, extremely dark. The villain in that thing is called the Harvester, who's this like serial killer who's like literally harvesting organs to do something with them, but they don't know what, and it's all about Bruce trying to track them down.
Interesting.
I would go down that route. Professor Pig is a really good shout for the tone of the new Batman stuff. I feel like Mr. Freeze is by far my favorite Batman villain. I feel like he's never really been done justice in live action. Obviously, there's only Arnold Schwarzenegger as the go-to. So Mads Mikkelsen is a shout because he could do a nice menacing version of him. Part of me would want Bryan Cranston to do it, because if you got Walter White era Bryan Cranston just shouting about Nora and trying to save Nora, his wife, who he's trying to make this cure for, and he's being held back as he's trying to just do the right thing, and you've got to save him from himself, I feel like Cranston could do a really good version of that. It might be too powerful, I guess, because Mr. Freeze, Victor Freeze is like a very weak individual when you take away the suit. But I feel like they did a good version of that in Breaking Bad. So I kind of just want to take that across. Walter White becomes Victor Freeze.
Mr. Freeze, if they did a younger version, could be played by, is it Rami Malek?
Rami Malek would be great. He's anyone like that that brings that sort of more like maniacal edge would be really fun.
Hell yeah.
A final question from Marcus the Thief. With the impending sale of Crystal Dynamics plus the rest to Embracer, could we now be one step closer to the dream of a new Legacy of Kain done by the guys behind the Darksiders games? Keep up the cracking work, guys. UBP for life. Now, all this Embracer stuff is fascinating. Like I said, Square Enix have sold off all their IP, bar Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest. Mm-hmm. So Legacy of Kain, I think, went to Embracer. So it's kind of one of those things where, do you think Legacy of Kain matters anymore? Can they do that justice now? Or does it just feel like something that only old farts like me and you care about?
Nosgoth was such a colossal failure that I do feel like it has done quite a considerable amount of damage to the IP. And that's the thing, you forget it happened, but unfortunately sales will say, like, people will go, well, that was the last time that we had one of them. Mm-hmm. I would love it if we managed to get another Legacy of Kain game out of the door, but I don't think it's going to happen, if I'm honest.
Same. The thing is, I really want them to be on that new PlayStation Plus premium service. Like, I really thought the Sony's opening salvo would be, here's Soul Reaver, here's Blood Omen, here's these cool franchises that we talk about all the time as a way to test the audience, to test the waters on whether it can be done better. I think that that'll be the case going forward. Maybe they do a couple of games every month or something, and they get the social media burst, and everyone gets to tweet and go, oh my god, Legacy of Kain. Because Soul Reaver 2 didn't sell that well, and Blood Omen 2 didn't review very well, but a lot of people love Soul Reaver 1. I love Blood Omen 2. But I've just Googled the voice actors, Michael Bell and Simon Templeman, Raziel and Kain. Yeah. They're both still going, and they're both like, you know, they've both been active. They did the Tomb Raider DLC where they popped up again. So it's like, maybe something like that. I just hope Legacy of Kain can live again, whether they resurrect the Defiance plans or whatever. They do something with the with the franchise. But yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending all their questions. This has been the Untitled Banner Podcast, the UBP, the UBP,
the UBP,
the UBP. Ivan Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you so much for having me, mate.
I am very glad you're doing very well. And massive thank you to everybody. Cheers, once again. We will catch you next week.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare tri-term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.